Going to call this meeting of the Agriculture Policy Committee to order, and we are on a very tight timeline. It's a busy last day of session, and carrying on from where we left off yesterday, we had a lengthy discussion about taking testimony, and we had received some conflicting advice on how to do that or what to do, and I will allow public testimony today, but we have, again, this strict timeline. We have to be voting by 10 to 4. We're going to be back on the floor by 5 o'clock. So at 10 to 4, we have to stop testimony and go with the vote on this resolution. So we want to make that clear. And also for members, yesterday was passed out a handout from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and you have that in your packets, and you can look at that, and that is what they had to say about this topic. Again, thank you all for coming today, and have a House research piece here, and it was updated back in June of 2012. And it starts off by saying all three branches of state government have authority to review administrative rules. And to clarify exactly what this resolution would or would not do, I'm going to call on Mr. Sullivan to explain what this resolution would do. Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, the resolution that's before the committee today is different in a couple ways from the resolution that the committee looked at yesterday. I'm looking at right now the CS Res 03 dated 5/2018. And the intent of the resolution as drafted is to sort of check all the boxes under 14.126 regarding this committee's authority to take this action as determined by the speaker, to identify the rule that's at issue here. The piece that's a bit different from what members saw yesterday is on line 1.18. See that in that be it further resolved clause, it says that if the chair of this committee satisfies the notification and publication requirements under the statute, then the Department of Agriculture may not adopt the proposed rule. So this is contingent upon action by the chair. And so if the chair did not satisfy the publication and notification requirements in the statute, the intent of the resolution as drafted is that the Department of Agriculture would not be prevented from adopting the rules under this statute. But if the chair does satisfy the notification and publication requirements, and the Senate has already voted, as I understand, to do so, then the Department of Agriculture would have to wait on adopting the nitrogen fertilizer rule until after the 2019 legislative session.
Thanks, Mr. Sullivan. Any questions on that? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so you're talking about lines 1.18 to 1.21, is that correct?
Correct.
All right. I just have a question. So the chair, so a lot then goes back to the chair. So the weight of the world is on your shoulders, Representative Anderson, regarding this then. So what will be your criteria specifically that gets you to act or not act?
Representative Poppy, again, it's been my hope that the governor would compromise with us and sign the ag policy bill. And we had a deadline, and maybe a little bit too quick. And I don't know if anything has happened today or not. If it has, maybe we're wasting time. But it's my hope or my intention to give him as much time as he needs. I believe we missed the three-day rule by 1 day, so he now has 15 days to either sign or veto the bill. So it would be my intention to allow the governor as much time and space as he needs to decide which bills he's going to what he's going to do with bills. And I would just encourage him that if he would sign the bill, if he would choose to sign the bill. I do not want to carry forward with this resolution if he would sign the bill, and I would guarantee that in any fashion he would want. But that's the intention, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand kind of the box that everybody has been put in. I think that, Mr. Chair, you, members of your committee here, and certainly the governor as well. And I did reach out to the governor last evening, and I did speak with him, and I know that this is under consideration. I think I was hopeful that there'd be something by this noon, but there's a lot of balls in the air right now, and I think that this is probably just one of those balls, and so unfortunately, no final decision was made. I am concerned that this is kind of, as I've described it, kind of the nuclear option, and it does, I'm worried about the bridges it burns by going through this. But is there any additional guarantee that if the governor signs the bill, that this isn't going to be invoked? Is this clear enough that this actually puts this aside for the entire year 2018 or beyond? I think that that's one thing that if I were the governor, I'd probably need something that says, okay, so if I do sign it, you could still use this, and that's a concern, at least I would raise, Mr. Chair.
Representative, I think you and I know each other well enough, but, I don't know the governor. He doesn't know me. I totally understand that. And for this resolution to go into effect, both ag chair committees have to follow through with the resolution and then statutorily notify, I believe it's three entities to be notified. And I would write whatever stating I would totally understand, and this would not go any further if he would see fit to sign that bill. And I would do whatever I had to do to assure him of that. See no further questions right now. We will open it up to public testimony. I see Assistant Commissioner Mr. Wollman is here, and if he would care to testify, we would like to hear from him. And again, we have to be through with testimony by 10 to 5. And before we get started, let's take care of the housekeeping. We have the minutes from yesterday's meeting, and I would call on Representative Nornes to check over the minutes and so move if he would see fit.
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes.
Minutes of the meeting of May 19th. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are adopted. Mr. Wollman, identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Matt Wollman. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I have to say I'm deeply disappointed that you're taking this action today. Your action to invoke Chapter 14.126 is both unprecedented and unnecessary. I'm also disappointed that members of the public only had about 15 minutes to drive from wherever they were in the state to come and have this opportunity to testify here this evening. This rule was promulgated under the Department of Agriculture's Groundwater Protection Act that was passed 30 years ago. It's been built on the Nitrogen Fertilizer Management Plan that we have worked on for many, many years, involving stakeholders from the agricultural community, the environmental community, the University of Minnesota. It's been in progress as long as I've been at the department. In fact, the Nitrogen Fertilizer Management Plan started in the previous administration, and had a group of stakeholders that worked on that. Last summer, the department released its informal draft of the rule. We did that because we wanted to hear from people all across the state before we started the official rulemaking process. And we engaged people all across the state. We had 17 listening sessions. We heard from over 1,500 people. We got 820 written comments. We made significant changes to the rule during that time frame. And we have done our level best to engage people, to hear people, and to make changes to make this rule better. And so I'm really disappointed in this approach. The commissioner mentioned as he was on the road that we would use a healthy dose of common sense. And I think we've done that. We've heard from a number of the ag stakeholders, the environmental stakeholders, and others that have commented on this latest draft of the rule. For example, the president of the Minnesota Corn Growers, Kirby Hepfer, told the Star Tribune that this rule is a reasonable approach. Tom Peterson from the Farmers Union told the Star Tribune, a lot of our concerns have been addressed. A lot of farmers can work within this rule. The president of the Winona County Farm Bureau said, few farmers apply fertilizer in the fall and winter, and the proposed ban on practices would not affect many Winona County farmers. Steve Morris from the Environmental Partnership said, the rule is a, quote, a modest step, but it sets up a good framework. I can't think of a time when we've had the environmental groups and the industry groups on the same page. So, Mr. Chair, we've worked with stakeholders. The stakeholders asked for the official comment period to be at least 45 days. We worked hard to accommodate that. Today, the official comment period is 80 days. We have a whole series of informational sessions that we have scheduled for this summer. We're going to be in Thief River Falls on May 30th. We're going to be in Fergus Falls on May 30th. We're going to be in Little Falls on May 31st. We're going to be in Red Wing on June 5th, in Casson on June 6th, and Pipestone on June 18th. And we're going to be in Hutchinson on June 19th, and St. Paul here again for a public hearing on June 28th. In addition to that, we have scheduled with the ALJ formal public hearings that citizens can come and officially comment. And there's a public hearing in Farmington on July 16th. And a public hearing on July 18th in Stuartville, and on July 19th in Worthington, and on July 25th in St. Cloud, and on July 26th in Park Rapids. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have worked very hard and are continuing to work very hard to hear from people to make this rule as good as it can be. I think we all recognize that in some areas of the state, we have some challenges. And I don't think that we want to send the message to the rest of Minnesota that agriculture doesn't care about water quality. Because I can tell you that I have heard from farmers, I'm a farmer myself, and I've heard from farmers, they care about water quality. They want to do something about this. And this is a modest step in that direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Question from Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wow, I had to scribble a bunch of notes. I promise. Brief.
Brevity would be.
Brevity's good. There is one comment that I want to do clarify on with Mr. Woman, and then I have a couple real short questions. They're just kind of yes-nos. So he quoted Mr. Hepfer, who's the chair or president of the Corn Growers. I know him as a friend first, and then I know him as a farmer, and then after that I know him as the chair of the Corn Growers. And when this rule first came out, he was one of the first people that I called because I consider him a friend. And while I can't discount what the Star Tribune may have heard him say of, I think he said, the rule is a reasonable approach, I would say that our 15-minute conversation, those combination of words may have been part of it, but the tone were certainly definitely different. He had major concerns about this. And so one thing I'd like us to be careful of is to take quotes from papers. I'm sure that Mr. Hetfer is going to be much more careful now in the future, but to say that all of agriculture is on board with this, I think, is not accurate. So, Deputy Commissioner, just a couple quick questions. Now, you talk about all these different comment days and meetings and stuff like that. Are those with the intent to inform, or are those with the intent to, if you hear major concerns, you're going to make a change?
Mr. Woolman.
Mr. Chair, members, the first eight sessions that I identified are there to help people understand what's in the rule and how they can engage in the process to provide comments through the second set of hearings in July. And so it's intended to give them, to help them understand what's currently in the rule, what the rule says, and then what the process is going forward and how they can bring their comments forward, bring their ideas and suggestions forward through the administrative law public hearings.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner. So what I hear you saying is that through that comment process, there could potentially, you could say, we understand that, and you make an adjustment or change after that, or is this rule set in stone right now?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, the whole intent of the hearings are to hear comments, and if there are comments that are made and suggestions that are made that we believe would make the rule better, there's an opportunity to make that rule better.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Miller.
Therein lies my concern. We're going to be leaving here session, and this thing can change, although it's going to be implemented by the end of the year before we come back in session. So one of the concerns that I've continued to have, and certainly not with the Department of Agriculture, I've been pretty good with you guys, but there have been other departments that have associated with this stuff that they say one thing today and they do the different thing tomorrow. I can think of a four-letter department that says that, and it's Bowser. Changes it all the time. Okay? So I have serious concerns. The whole purpose of this rule that we're voting on is to say we need to make sure, we need to send a message that agriculture, we don't want to send a message that agriculture doesn't care about clean water. I don't think we're doing that. I think what we're doing is we're sending a message that agriculture is very concerned about how this process is going forward. And people like Mr. Hetfer come to their elected representative and say, we have concerns, and we want you to do something about it. I talked about this at the meeting yesterday, Mr. Chair, that there's a hierarchy of responsibilities here, and elected officials have to be the people that say what does and doesn't happen. We definitely need the role of the bureaucrat to be able to execute on the things that we have wishes going forward from the governor, from law that's in the state of Minnesota. But we certainly need to be. That's why we're here today. That's what our concern is that these things aren't being heard. And when I hear that this can be changed during the summer, that causes me greater concern. Not comfort. So that's all I have to say, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Quick follow-up.
Mr. Chair, my only follow-up would be that, we've been working on this for many, many years, probably close to 10 years. And, the draft rule came out in June of 2017. We held comments all summer, last summer. We're going to be engaging in comments the rest of this summer. I think people have had their opportunity to make their voice heard on this, and they're going to have more.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. And if we have time, I'd have a question, too, but I want to get to other public testimony because our clock is moving. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify in favor of or has concerns about this resolution? Sir, come on down.
Sitting more in the front of the room, I didn't know if there were a lot of hands up behind me, but
welcome. State your name and proceed.
I have a handout here, too, if I could share.
Okay. Our page can help you with that.
Great. Okay. My name is Steve Morse. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and we are the state's largest conservation environmental coalition with 70 organizational members with hundreds of thousands of people around the state. And I'm testifying on behalf of the coalition and its very deep concerns about this legislation and or this resolution, I should say, that's before you. And I understand that this is being brought forward as a way to leverage the governor on other issues is what I think I just heard. I came in just as that description was happening, so I don't want to put words in your mouth. But I understand it's in play with a number of other issues, but I'm not going to talk to that. I just want to talk to the merits or demerits of this resolution, and I'll just take just a few minutes if I can. First of all, let me be clear. So my home county is Winona County. We're in the southeastern part of the state. It's one of the areas that's been involved with the department's testing program. My home is down in the lower area, not up on the ridges, so we're not in the most vulnerable areas. But of the wells that they tested in the testing program in Winona County, 19% of the private wells have water levels with nitrates that exceed the health risk limits. And we're not the worst area in the state. We have areas in the state that go up to 30 or to 40% of the water that's tested has nitrates at that level. I want to give you a little history just on this groundwater bill. It goes back a few years. The initial legislation was introduced 30 years ago, and it was introduced because shortly before that is when we first started finding pollution in terms of nitrates as well as pesticides in our groundwater supplies. And many people across the state were very concerned. So what ultimately happened is there was a broad policy that was passed 29 years ago, but it relied on first and foremost working with the Department of Ag and with farmers to do voluntary best management practices to change the way fertilizers apply, to change the way cropping systems work, in order to first use that as kind of the first response. And then only when that wasn't effective after some time was the agency then to move to stronger protections. So it's been 29 years. We've spent a generation doing BMPs, education, different practices with agriculture, and a lot of it has improved the use of fertilizer. But the pollution in our water has gotten worse and worse. I know you distributed the letter we had available yesterday. It talks about the number of public water supplies, over 500 with high nitrogen levels. And in the sheet I handed out just now, it's got the list of, I believe it's 50 communities that have nitrate levels over 5.4, which is considered kind of actionable. And those are the communities that are partially protected, have some protection under this measure. So what this is part of a continuum response, very slow response, I'd say. As we said in the letter, it's a modest, or in the comments, it's a modest response. But it does start to target extra protections on the areas of the state, such as my Winona County, where I live, where we have a high incidence of contamination of our drinking water wells, or the 50 communities that have high levels of nitrates that have already been documented. The additional cost to these communities is significant. From St. Peter, which I think the public utility person we talked to there said their water costs about 50% more because of the treatments that they have to do to withdraw to get the nitrogen out of the water, to other communities that are quite a bit more. So in part two of the rule, I'm not going to go into all the details, but that's what focuses on these communities, mostly rural communities. For example, Utica in Winona County is one of the communities that's on the list. What they do is they say within the area where the water is recharged and where it takes, like if you drop a drop of water on the surface, if it takes less than 10 years to get into the water supply, maybe we ought to be doing and requiring, ultimately, some smarter practices there in order to protect that water. Now, there are over 110,000 Minnesotans that live in these communities with these contaminated wells. And so what the department is doing is taking a very measured and, I would say, modest, I guess, response to start saying, You know, in these communities, first of all, you got to do your BMPs, you got to do the best management practices, but we're going to work with farmers and we're going to start figuring out, you know, what else we can do. And such things might be putting in cover crops, doing multiple cropping systems, other things to protect that water. Because we know if we change crops, we know if we put in cover crops, that stuff actually works. But what this resolution would do is delay this process at least another year. And so, you know, it's you know, I don't know how to phrase this. Other states have run into serious water quality supplies. And I'm thinking in Michigan, where for years the city of Flint dealt with the lead issue. And it was kind of a known thing by some local leaders and some people in the state. But the leaders didn't act to protect the public. And I was listening earlier, and I understand, as a former legislator, it is your responsibility to oversee the framework of policy. But I would argue it's not your responsibility to see the details of all the policy. And I think it is your highest and most important responsibility is to look out for the public health and well-being of our citizens. And by slowing this down, even if you just slow it down another year, what's 29 to 30? You're fundamentally delaying and not doing the job that I think is really your highest calling, which is the public health and well-being. Because this is a serious public health threat, and the department has slowly, methodically gone through a public process to develop a proposal that moves us forward. And to stop it now is really to deny the protections that Minnesotans need, whether private well owners like me or community well, people that drink community well water, 110,000 Minnesotans, mostly rural Minnesotans, that drink this water, you're denying them the protection that we as a state should be providing them. So I would just encourage you to think twice, long and hard, before you use this as a mechanism to leverage other activities in state government, because it's something we really shouldn't be playing games with.
Thanks, Mr. Morris. So just a quick question. You talk about putting it back a year. The main thrust of this, I believe, is the fall application of fertilizer, at least in parts of the state. If this resolution doesn't take effect, the nitrogen rule goes into effect, as I understand, in December or January, after the fall application period. So this would, in effect, push back the effective date from January to May. So to say it pushes it back a whole year in terms of fall application, I don't quite agree with that. Mm-hmm. Can you comment on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not, you could ask the department that question. I'm not clear on all the timelines for the fall application, but as I mentioned, there are two parts to the rule. The one is the fall application, which applies in areas like much of Winona County where I live. The other is part two that provides protections for the 50-plus communities and the 110,000 Minnesotans. And, you know, we should be about the business of figuring out how to change practices in that less than 100,000 acres. We're talking about less than 100,000 acres, but how we can start working with farmers to change practices to protect that public water. And that would be delayed for a whole year. I'm not sure exactly how the fall application works.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Questions from members?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, if I could just, I'm sorry, I didn't reference this handout, just real quickly.
Okay.
Some of the points I made, the cities that are listed here, you can see some of them. I mentioned Utica, Cold Springs. Now you can look at the cities. And on the back is a map with the communities in orange where these well water recharge areas are that would get some protection under this rule. So just for your reference.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you.
Anybody else in the audience would care to testify? Representative Bly.
I just had a question. I was looking at the resolution. I'm wondering if you could give a little more explanation to the lines 2.1 and to 2.3, where it says that this resolution does not restrict the right of other committees of the legislature to take further actions. And so when we're talking about delaying this a year, would this make it possible for another committee to delay it, you know, forever? I mean, is that possible? That's what I'm asking.
Are you talking another ag committee or another?
Well, it doesn't specify here whether it would be another ag committee or not. It just says committee. And so I guess I'm wondering, could the rule be delayed indefinitely according to this resolution?
Well, we can ask Mr. Sullivan, but the committee that has jurisdiction, in this case the Ag Policy Committee, is the committee that would have the the responsibility of this. Mr. Sullivan, could you comment on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Blythe, yeah, I agree with the statement that the chair just made that, as determined by the Speaker, the current Speaker of the House, only this committee has jurisdiction to take this action with respect to the nitrogen fertilizer rules. Maybe the implication of this portion that you've identified is more that this committee can't stop the legislature at large from, say, passing a law to affect the rules, that this committee's action doesn't supersede additional action by the legislature as a whole.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think actually you covered it when you were talking about the impact of this delay, and the last testifier had noted that we were trying to stop this, and that's not true. We're just delaying it until we have time for the legislature, for our committee and the legislature to review the final ruling, as I believe it is the next fall of 2019 with the fertilizer that would be impacted. So thank you.
Seeing no further, Representative Mahoney.
Well, I think Representative
go ahead, you can go.
I believe we are coming to a vote on this particular
yeah.
resolution.
Yeah.
But a couple of comments to Representative Miller and Munson's comments about the message that you're sending, which apparently I was being followed on Twitter quite a bit last night. I didn't realize that the committee was such a hot topic on Twitter last night. I was amazed at the comments because I really truly believe that the farmers are the feeder people who feed America. I get that. But the resentment about how farmers are treating our water as the state's water, I was shocked. So you may not think you're sending a message, but you are. You definitely are sending a message. And you may say it's delaying this just till we get to see this next year, but you might be one of the few that believe that. Mr. Chair, I don't believe that this particular resolution is of your making. I think there's other forces at work. But you nevertheless have opened a Pandora's box with this resolution, not for the Ag Committee, not for this particular issue. But you've opened a Pandora's box. Now, chairs of like committees on any issue, economic development, taxes, health and human services, can use this tool to multiple ends. So I won't be voting for this resolution. But I strongly hope that you do, to bring it forward, to see how, so that the Supreme Court can weigh in, to see how much we're going to neuter a governor or not neuter an executive branch. Because that's exactly what this bill does, or this resolution does. So I guess I'm done.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of points. This has been 10 years in the making. This is not totally new. You had the opportunity to actually have a hearing on the rule. It's out there. You could have had a hearing just in the last couple of weeks. That did not happen. You're really stopping the Clean Water Action from happening, and I know that this is sort of a stall, but it also, next year, you know, the same thing could happen. It could be happening every year. So, again, I did my best to try to get some resolution on this. I'm sad that the communication and the trust has been so diminished that we can't get to a satisfactory conclusion before the end of session. This is a political battle that I'm really, again, concerned about that we're creating. So I, again, I've asked for a roll call, and I would encourage people to really consider that and to vote no. Thank you.
Last comment from Representative Johnson. We're already 5 minutes past my self-imposed deadline. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to start by the drumbeat we hear that nobody's been listened to. The evidence is the opposite, and it's the evidence of the process that was used last summer. We went over yesterday about the extensive effort that the department went to listen across the state of Minnesota. And the result is a different proposed rule than the informal rule that was initially proposed. If that isn't listening, I don't know what it is. They definitely listened. They clearly listened, and they adapted the rule to what they heard. That's rulemaking at its best. And so the accusations that the Department of Agriculture has not listened is firmly denied by the change in the rule itself. I watched the Senate do it yesterday, and we've sat in these hearings, and we've talked about this issue to death, it feels. And what really struck me last night when I was watching the Senate, then I was kind of listening for it here as well. You know who has not been heard in this? Who we've never talked about? The people who drink the water. The people in these 30 communities who drink the water. We never talk about them. I never hear any talk about them. And yet they're the people that are paying for it. Again, in St. Peter, Mr. Moulton, if he were here, would say it's about $10 a month for an average house. $120 a year. They've been doing it for about 8 years. And so it's about $1,000 per household. And I look at this list of communities. I know a number of them. And I could pick on Verndale's in Wadena County. It's kind of near my tree farm. But even in St. Peter, these communities are full of senior citizens. Senior citizens that will be paying are currently paying $120 more a year for their drinking water. And I don't think they can afford it in St. Peter. They're also full of young families. I know that I'll just stay to St. Peter because I've knocked every door in St. Peter a couple of times. Full of families. In fact, families that are headed by somebody who works as a security counselor at the security hospital who earns about $40,000 a year. Family of four. I've seen them time and again. I know them. I could name them. And they're paying $120 more a year for their drinking water. They've paid out over time $1,000. That's money that those families could use. Furthermore, as I talked about yesterday, the farmers who work in the Drisma, who farm in that area, care deeply about those families. There's an interconnected feeling about that. And I'll go so far as to suggest that those families that are paying more for the drinking water in all of these communities typically have less wealth, at least landed wealth, than the farmers who are being asked to farm a little differently, most of whom already are farming a little differently because they're darn good farmers. They know you farm different in these areas. They know you farm different in the coarse soils. I've heard it time and time again. So the imbalance here is just stark. And what we're doing is it feels like a political game. I don't know what's going on. It feels like a game of chicken. And we're ignoring the people who really are harmed by this. The people who are drinking the water and paying the additional amount. You know, the governor asked, this is obviously the argument is over a measure in the ag policy bill versus this. So it's this political, everybody in St. Paul knows what's going on. This is a political game going on. And I think the public knows it as well. I think Representative Mahoney is right. I think Minnesota's talking about this. And so I'll just leave with this one last plea. This feels real premature. Mr. Chair, you can call this committee back to session at a future date. Should the governor veto the bill and you feel adamantly that this is the response needed in return for the veto, you can call us back. We can do the vote then. We're trying to get through the last day of session. We're done. What time is it? It's 5:00. We've got now 7 hours. 7 more hours that I've gotten a legislative session, myself personally, but more, 7 hours more that the state of Minnesota has to do the people's business through this, the legislature. It's a high-pressure time. This is a high-pressure issue that involves a lot of people that cannot afford to pay that additional money for that water. My request today is that you put off this vote. We can come back. We can all come back to this meeting if need be. At least give the governor a chance to consider the bill. Give the governor a chance to work through this in this highly tense time. This is a very poor time to make this. This is, I'll argue, this is a radical action. It's never been done in the 17 years that this has been done. Representative Mahoney raises a very legitimate issue. My guess is there's a lawyer out there that goes, do two committees really have the power to do this? That's a legitimate legal question. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm smart enough to know that's a legitimate legal question that can lead to a whole plethora of legal work by a lot of lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. To do this at this time, knowing that this is such a distinctly different type of an action, remembering, too, the people who drink this water, those young families, the senior citizens in these communities on this list that are will be affected by it. I ask for a delay on this, and that's my request. Thank you very much.
Representative, just a couple of quick comments on your words, and I respect your words immensely. My hope is that these good practices that you are referring to will continue. This just pushes back the enactment date by 5 or 6 months. In the last technical comment on, we could come back in a week or a month and do this if we felt we had to, I've been in touch with staff and such, and after we sine-die tonight, our committee is no longer in effect. At least rules of the House, the Senate may be different, but once we sine-die, these committees do not have any official power anymore until next year when session starts and the whole process begins again. We can have informal meetings and take no action, but after, again, midnight tonight, or actually is it tonight or tomorrow night, sine-die, this committee loses its legislative authority until a year from now. So that's the reason for the timeline. Representative Pearson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I think there's this false urgency that's being created over a rule that's been under development for over 10 years, is what we're hearing over and over again, and now we're expected that we should just adopt it immediately. I think this is a reasonable action. It clearly isn't going to. The major impacts of this rule aren't going to affect a season because we're going to be able to address this within the next legislative session. And so with that, just for housekeeping, I think I'd like to move the resolution CS Reso 3.
Representative Pearson moves the CSRESO 3 resolution. A roll call has been asked for, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Anderson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Backer.
Yes.
Representative Bennett.
Yes.
Representative Bly.
No.
Representative Daniels.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Knishpadin.
No.
Representative Luke. Representative Mahoney.
No.
Representative Mariani. Representative Miller.
Yes. Yes.
Representative Munson.
Aye.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pearson.
Yes.
Representative Poppy.
No.
Representative Poston.
Yes.
Representative Sauk.
By a vote of 9-6, the resolution is passed. In my final words, to allow the governor as much space and time as possible as to what bills he's going to sign or not sign, I tell you I will not submit this resolution until we see what happens the next few days. It's my sincere hope that Governor Dayton would look favorably on the ag policy bill. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.